Welcome in everyone to Flyover Footy. My name is Matt Baker, joined by Santiago Beltran, as always, for another Flyover Footy Fallout. And this week, for the first time in 2025, we have a win to look back on for St. Louis City SC. A 3-0 win against the LA Galaxy. The first win away of the season in 2025, keeping the clean sheet streak going. Third straight clean sheet streak to talk about. And we're in some rarefied air. Before I bring Santi in, St. Louis City SC has, as of this game, become the fifth team in the past decade and 11th in MLS history to not concede a goal within the first three games of a season, joining Toronto FC from 2024, Nashville SC from 2023, DC United from 2019, and DC United, the New England Revolution, both from 2015. Santi, welcome. Glad to talk to you. How are you feeling after this match day?
Thanks, Matt. Happy Monday. Feeling great. This was finally great to call some goals for the team to get its first win. We know the schedule at the beginning of the season is difficult, and we know Seattle, who won 5-2, is coming next. But coming to Energized Park after a win, and a win with lots of goals and a decent amount of chances created and another great defensive performance will be great.
Yeah, it's hard to over say just how exciting this match was, because in a bubble, it was an amazing performance against the LA Galaxy. But when you put it together alongside the first two games before that, as well as the two games coming up next, this was, I didn't want to say a must win game, but it was an extremely important game for just being the third game of the season.
Yeah, important game to build confidence, and what a way to do it with a third consecutive clean sheet. That's a testament of what the defense is doing. Obviously, Roman Berkey came big last night and made some great saves, but the team great on defense, and now things clicking on the offense. So that's great. And you said maybe it was a must win game. I saw it the same way. It's like LA Galaxy played midweek, they have injuries, so it's a good opportunity to first score goals and second to get that first win.
Kind of view it as a measuring stick, where if you're going to call yourself a good team or a contending team, you have to kind of jump on these opportunities. You have to use the LA Galaxy's situation, both injuries and fatigue, five matches in 20 days. This is their third of those five matches. You really have to pounce on that. And if you can't take advantage of this, then you're going to struggle on the road in general. And it was great to see St. Louis take advantage. Now, Santi, let's go back to the beginning and start where we usually start on Fallout with our starting 11. And for the first time in 2025, we got all 11 of our projected players correct. We started with Roman Berkey in net, obviously. Jannes Horn, Henry Kessler, and Kyle Hebert made up the three center back partnership. Conrad Wallum and Thomas Totlin were the left and right wing backs. Edu Leuven and Chris Dirk in the central midfielders. Marcel Hartl, the center attacking mid, and Cedric Teuchert and Klaus were our strikers. 11 out of 11, we got what we wanted to see. Initial thoughts before this game started, were you as excited as we kind of were last week when we were talking about this lineup?
Yeah, it was great to see some continuity, especially on the defense. I know on our DMs we were talking a little bit about the center back situation and Timo now being healthy and maybe him getting an opportunity. But at the same time, like when we're talking, I say, well, Kyle Hebert has done great, so he deserves to continue being a starter for now. And yeah, even though he had a bad pass, and I think it was on the first half, then he performed great, and then he became a left wing back at the end and had that assist with Simon Becher. That was a great goal. So it just shows what Kyle can do for the team in different positions. He started on the right, then went to left center back, and then to left wing back, and he excelled in all those positions. It just shows the value he has for the team. But yeah, I was excited about seeing that lineup. Klaus getting another opportunity. I like what I saw from him, even though it was kind of a different role in my opinion. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But yeah, it was a good lineup to face an LA Galaxy who came to this game in a losing streak.
Yeah. And I think that was the you touched on it, Klaus. I think that was the thing I was most excited to see in this lineup, because we had come off of two clean sheets. The formation seems pretty sound at this point. We're just kind of tweaking personnel to see who fits best where when everybody's healthy. Kyle Hebert remaining in the lineup, no problems at all with. You come off a performance where you're withstanding a San Diego press, you're withstanding 20 plus shots, and you're doing what you need to do in the back line. No problem sticking with this group. Yes, we do want to see more of Timo Baumgartel. And I know we will see more of Timo Baumgartel as he gets back into fitness. He had an illness last week that kept him out of the lineup entirely. But Kyle Hebert kind of personified, especially in the second half, what ended up happening with the subs, the formation shift to a 5-4-1, and then moving out on the wing back as the second set of subs came in. When we start off this 3-4-1-2 or 3-4-3, depending on how you view Marcel Hartl, I think I was excited to see Chris Durkin get plugged in here in the midfield. Chris Durkin, alongside Edu Leuven, performed that Akil Watts role. There wasn't a whole lot of difference that he provided, and Edu Leuven, more often than not, stayed back closer to the center backs. And the amount of touches that he had leading the entire team kind of showed that and allowed Edu Leuven to direct the ball. Klaus's role in this, though, to circle back, was kind of fascinating, because to me, it really was what I wanted to see. It was, dare I say, a false nine in the amount that he was coming back for the ball, the amount that he was trying to play that connecting piece and then distribute and then join the attack. You saw that in the second goal. You saw it a few times. You saw it in Toyshirt's miss early in the first half where he shot against the siding of the net. And I think Klaus is really at home in this style. I think he wants to be a playmaker with the ball. He wants to at least control the ball and dictate the flow a little bit. And as lumbering as he looks, as awkward as he might look in his stride, he's fast, and he will accrue the miles, and he has the physicality and the physio to be able to withstand that. And so seeing Klaus in this role was what I wanted to see after last week's performance, where we saw Boettcher and Toyshirt for that first 45. I didn't think that worked well at all. I thought that Klaus's abilities to control the ball and his physicality to hold off the defense in those areas of the midfield, especially, that helps better connect guys like Marcel Hartl, Cedric Toyshirt in the attack, and bringing the ball up from the wings, or Edu Leuven.
And just to echo on that, when that's his assignment, he does great. Where I had a problem before is when he was the number nine, but he wasn't staying in the box, and he was trying to come out and do more than what he was asked to do. That's when I had a problem before, but yesterday he had a great performance in that false nine role, and you saw it on some of the plays. He helped on the build-up, and then he almost scored a goal.
Yes.
Just being that forward in the box and trying to cut in and finding a space, he did great at that too. So it's great to see him back doing what he does well. I would have liked for him to score, so he just got more confidence, but he's going up, and that's great to see.
Sati, let's look at some three-word reviews. Our friend Stuart Holkren provides these post-game, borrowing from a Fulham tradition, and I think we had the vibes as high as they were expected to be after this one. Some three-word reviews from the fan base. STL, greater than LA. Only getting better. It's back on. Mm-hmm. Berkey's still great. Melberg, Swedish Mourinho. Okay.
I like that one.
Very different halves. Yeah, no argument there. Do it again. We're so back. Let Klaus eat. All right, I like that. Berkey's still best. Goals and points. Nailed it. About damn time. Okay, I like that one. That was fun. Yep. Berkey being Berkey. Got one in here that Berkey Germans Hebert, straight to the point. Okay. Mm. Kind of encompassing there in the middle a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Offense we've needed, playing a little loose with the three words right there. Mm-hmm. Witnessing Olaf's philosophy. I like that one. Finally, potential unlocked. See, these are realizations of the promise that we had been given by St. Louis. So I think those three-word reviews, and thank you so much for everybody who's leaving those. They're easy to leave, and it gets a gut check at what a lot of people are feeling post-game. So those came right after the game. I think they highlighted a lot of the things that we saw in the run of play. Some of my takeaways in what I saw in this match is consistent low possession. We weren't really looking to possess the ball for clear amounts of time. We were more willing to let LA do that and also let an LA team do that that didn't have the quality to possess the ball and create chances very well. So that was a smart approach to me. Our builds were so much more quality than San Diego. We worked the ball through the wings incredibly well, especially in the first half. The short passes, playing out of the back, really smart builds. And we weren't trying to do too much. We were just trying to play what LA was taking. And LA tried to press a little bit in that first half. And I thought we did work the ball around very well. That's one of the benefits to this system. If we can be intelligent on the ball, if we can help out in overload situations by bringing more volume of players in those smaller areas. And we were seeing Conrad Wollom at times in both halves do that, where he was coming across the field, he was helping out. So we weren't necessarily leaving a guy open on an island across the field looking for a switch. We were purposefully bringing players in numbers to small areas of the field to help progress the ball out of these areas, but also drawing LA deeper. And so that creates all this space that you end up seeing in the midfield and down the attacking wings and in the attacking third to really hit on it. It's almost like you're hitting on a counter, but you're really possessing the ball in your deep third. You get it to the middle third and then you're off and running. I mean, you just, the gun goes off and you hit the ball, you hit the ground running on that, and you get those Klaus runs, you get those Klaus Hartl and Toyshirt runs that we saw a few times. And that seems to be more of the ideal go-to of this system, where you have the three center backs and the wing backs, and you have this build out of the back mentality. You draw the defense deeper to the field, to your goal side of the field. But then once you free up the midfield and you have your attacking players that can be these line breaking forwards, then you're off and running and you're still doing this transition type offense. You're still creating this quick movement direct to goal after possessing the ball for a little bit in your own end. The quality is going to drive that. The numbers game is going to drive that in your ability to break any team's press. And it worked really well, especially in the first half by the St. Louis side, in my opinion.
Yeah, very, very smart approach. Yesterday, I really like, at times the team was patient on the buildup. I also like at times when Galaxy was pressing, the team going with quick touches to try to break that press and find a space. But the fact that possession was low, I don't think it tells the whole story. And Melberg, and I know we're going to talk about his remarks later, but he wasn't happy with the team at times losing possession so quickly. But I think the team overall was smart when he got the ball. And it was a very confident team on defense, and we can see that when we talk about the average height of defensive actions.
Yeah, and Olaf Melberg did say post-game, I mean, let's talk about it, he did have some critical comments to say about the team in the first half, especially their ability to finish some of these chances. He did say that they had a lot of possession. It's mostly not because of our pressure on the ball or our defending was poor. It's more because we lost the ball a little too easily at times. They having possession, meaning LA, obviously. Olaf said, I understand him, though, because there was so much space when we won the ball to go on the break. But sometimes when we spend 5 to 10 minutes for longer periods, defending is nice also to keep the ball for a while. I think we can bury that a little bit better in the future. So it's finding a balance. I don't think 30% possession is in the wheelhouse of what Olaf wants this team to be doing. But it's also, you can dictate the pace of play more when you get those goals early. That's just the fact of the game. So let's dig into what some of these players were doing. Let's look at these passing networks, goals added, some of the stats that we like to look at, Santi. And this team was a little bit more stretched out. The passing network had our center backs in a more deep, low-lying position in their average area that they started connecting these passes. Center backs in Henry Kessler, in Jonas Horn, and Kyle Hebert were all fairly close to the goal compared to what they had been the previous games. But the spacing between our center backs and our midfielders, especially Edu Leuven, was pretty substantial. It was much more vertical than what the LA Galaxy had. The LA Galaxy were a much more tightly compact team, and St. Louis spread out their back line compared to their midfield and their strikers. And I think this gave a lot of space to play once you were Edu Leuven, especially, and you were able to connect these lines. That's a benefit I think Leuven had, is that he had a good balance of where he was positionally on the field when he received his passes. You know, he had space to work. And when you're Eddie Leuven, if you give Eddie Leuven space to work, he's going to make the right decision more often than not. One thing that I think was kind of fascinating to me is if you look at this passing map, you see that left back or that left wing role tucked in. And this Conrad Wallen position, I think, tells you two things. It was, A, we weren't working the ball down our left a majority of the game. But also, Wallen was, to my point earlier, very much willing to fold in and help with the volume numbers as Thomas Totlin was receiving the ball. The passing graph that we see has thick lines directed towards Thomas Totlin and how the ball was going through him for a lot. And he had one of the most touches of the game as well. But when you're doing that and you're focusing on the right side, you either have your left side on an island so you can set up for a switch, or you bring that player in and you can help create numbers advantages to progress the ball. And that's what Conrad Wallen was doing very well. We aren't a team that's going to switch the ball up a lot. We aren't a team that's going to draw in defenders and then make these massive moves to shift the entire field to the opposite side. And so I like that Wallen, who himself has midfield experience in pretty good spades, you know, so he's familiar, he's comfortable working in the midfield. I think this makes sense for what St. Louis was trying to do. And the goals added stat gives you an idea of which players were successful in all phases of play. This goals added G plus looks at the last couple sequences on the ball and basically whether you put your team in a position to score or concede based on the specific stats like shooting, passing, receiving, fouls, all of those things, aggression. So Marcel Hartl had the highest goals added, followed by Cedric Teuchert, Kyle Hebert, Thomas Totlin, Henry Kessler, Simon Betcher, and Conrad Wallen. Leuven, Horn, Klaus, and Watts were next, but you really saw better than normal performances by Hartl, Teuchert, Kyle Hebert, and Thomas Totlin, as well as Henry Kessler. I mean, these are the players that you want to see pass the ball into dangerous areas. You saw receiving from Teuchert, Hartl, as well as their goal contributions. And I think when you have your attacking players and the defenders that you're relying on to keep your clean sheets as the best goals added of your team, I think that's a recipe for success. They're doing what they need to do to put the ball away. They're doing what they need to do to keep the ball out of dangerous areas, or whether it's clearing or passing the ball out of it. I thought it was a magnificent job from both the front and the back lines in almost the entirety of this game.
Yeah, it was definitely a great performance. Just going back to the passing network, obviously seeing what Conrad Wallen was doing, going to the right side and helping Thomas Totlin and participating in the build-up. That was refreshing to see, something I had not seen this team do much before. And the other thing I wanted to mention was Klaus. You can see him leaning towards the right, and that tells how much his role was on the attack on that side and how different his role was than his usual number nine.
That's true. The team itself was more skewed over to the right side for almost the entire portion of the game. I think the work defensively was noteworthy because this game kind of reinforced the positioning as far as San Diego goes in the average height of defensive actions. This is a stat that we look at where of all of the defensive work, interceptions, challenges, clearances, recoveries, blocked passes, and tackles, where do they occur on the field? And then when you put them all together, where's the average that City was engaging on the ball? The average height was about 34.87 meters, which is nearer to goal, just a little bit more advanced than San Diego, but definitely less than Colorado and a market amount less than what we saw last year. This could be that little zone that City's falling into. So that's something to watch for in the next couple of games as we have really good quality opposition in Seattle and Philadelphia, is where does City set up for their line of engagement? They were still pressing. They did still have more than a handful of engagements in the attacking half, but I would say 90%+ of their engagements were in their defensive half. Some in that middle third of the field, yeah, but it was definitely in the defensive half where they were engaging the ball. And that goes to the first point I was making about this City team purposefully wanting to do that. They're fine to take over the ball in their defensive half of the field if it draws in the defenders and they can engage those passes to unlock the forwards, get them running in transition in numbers games with Teuchert and Hartl and Klaus. That is the recipe for success here, as opposed to purposefully trying to turn the ball over in your attacking half. that was a Bradley Carnell staple. This team doesn't seem as, it doesn't seem as necessary for this team to do that. If it works, that's great, but they're not going to overextend themselves to do that. And that's why I'm seeing this line of engagement. And I'm thinking, especially passing the eye test, because you got to remember what the eye test was like in addition to this data. It works for what this City team is trying to do, especially with how quality this backline has been in preventing the high quality chances against.
Yeah, it's definitely working so far. But one thing I want to see, and it was in one of those three-word reviews, do it again. So great opportunity on Saturday against Seattle, a team that City hasn't done well against. But yeah, the sample in these first three games, I like what I'm seeing. It's a different, definitely a different style, not relying so much on the press and defending so high, and the ability to build from the back, which is something, at least for me, is something I'm used to just from back home, seeing teams touching more and building out of the back. That's what I like to see. So I may be biased, but that's something I really like to see.
Let's get into the kind of not the blow by blow of the match, but let's talk about some of the more noteworthy parts of this match now. In the first half, I think it was easy to argue that most of the first half was back and forth. St. Louis started off the game really strong. Shots by Conrad Vollem and Marcel Hartl in the first couple minutes of the game. And then I think there was five corners in the first 5 minutes or something like that. It was a crazy amount of corners early in the game. I know that for sure. You get into moments where Klaus hit it off the post. That was something that will remain with fans, is through all the conversation, all the stats we saw pregame about how Klaus hasn't scored since April or May of last year, I think it was, that he hit one off the post. In addition to doing all the things he needs to do off the ball and with the ball to help generate chances, he very nearly had a goal in this game. This is if the ball had fallen just a little bit differently when he hooked it from the right side. It was a beautiful step over from Klaus to get a shot off to create space, and it was a shame that it didn't go in. It could have changed things a little bit earlier than when it ended up happening. You had Cedric Teuchert with a good XG shot that hit the side of the net, and this was generated by Klaus. Klaus playing the ball on the right wing around 22 minutes, playing it up to Hartl and then Teuchert. This was kind of the first perfect example of those three playing off each other, where you have the ball in tight spaces around that middle third of the field at midfield, and then you're quickly able to unlock yourselves and get into a transition where you're having space to run and to work with. Teuchert just kind of took a little bit too long to evaluate what he wanted to do. He either needed to take the shot earlier in his progression or pass the ball off, but he ended up holding it just a little bit too long and it hit the side of the net. And then it was noteworthy to me in the middle of the first half, you had about a 10-minute period. And I think this is kind of important because this was the first of these sequences in this game. Keep in mind the second half sub, when that came. Keep in mind what you saw after the second half subs, which is a lot of opportunities from the Galaxy. So in this first half, between 24 minutes and 34 minutes, the Galaxy had 6 total shots compared to St. Louis's 0. They were controlling the field. Now, this was one of those two moments in the game where you had a long stretch of Galaxy dangerous opportunities and really nothing from St. Louis. I don't think there was a single St. Louis really danger in this chance. Definitely no St. Louis shots. So from 24 to 34, this happened. 44 minutes hit. And this was after St. Louis started to get a little pressure, had a couple shots come off in the 10 minutes before that. And then 44 minutes, Cedric Teuchert scored his first goal, or the first goal for St. Louis. It was an assist by Henry Kessler. It was off a corner kick. It was a chance created by Conrad Vollem to Marcel Hartl in a pass down the left channel. Hartl's pass or shot was blocked out for a corner. Hartl took the corner, and it was Klaus, Kessler, and Durkin, and Taylor Twellman did a good job of calling this out on the broadcast, that were right on top of the keeper, right on top of Mitrovic. The ball was played into that area, so it was very intentional to have numbers right there with the height advantage of Klaus and Kessler. The ball was played there. It was bobbled by Mitrovic, the LA keeper, a failed clearance, deflected by Klaus. There was just a lot of chaos going on here. The ball ends up landing-ish to Henry Kessler, who gets it over to Cedric Teuchert for an easy lay-in, where Teuchert, after the game, called this the easiest goal he's ever scored in his career. And I think it's pretty safe to say, because you look at the stats of this goal, the XG behind this individual shot from Teuchert were 0.32, which is just a rather absurd individual XG. But the expected goals on target, when you take into consideration the shot as well as where he put it on goal, 0.95. This was about as surefire of a goal, statistically speaking, as you're going to find. And Toyshirt ends up not just scoring a goal, not just scoring the first goal of City season, but in one of the most important three phases of play that I've argued since City started. You have the beginning of the game that can dictate everything that comes. You have right before halftime that can sit with a team and force them to make tactical adjustments they might not otherwise have made. And then right out of half. So if you can control one of these three and leave the other two neutral, you're doing well. If you can control two or three, you're in some really good shape. And not to get too ahead of ourselves, but St. Louis controlled two of these three, arguably three, given the start that we had to the game with Vollem and Hartl, but definitely two. And so Toyshirt to score this, that's not even counting what Thomas Tolan almost did right before half.
Oh my God. Yeah. Just a few minutes later.
And the XG on that individual shot was 0.75. That was a shot that three out of four times you will make. And Tolan just didn't make it in this game. Chances galore to end the half after withstanding that 10 plus minutes where you couldn't generate much of anything, but you withstood the LA output. And going into half, we only had 36% possession. We had two shots on target out of six total, where the Galaxy had three of eight. And the Galaxy had about double us in the number of accurate passes. So they were possessing the ball. They were passing the ball around in twice as much as we were. And we were the ones who walked into halftime up 1-0. Were you happy with the overall with this first half, or was it a nail biter that Toyshirt just really made that much better?
It was kind of a nail biter because it was back and forth. You could think if you count Toyshirt's miss and then Totland's miss, you could say, oh, this could have been 3-0 at the half. But at the same time, LA Galaxy created chances. That's when Roman Berkey had two or three critical saves when the game was still 0-0. So it could have been 3-0 City, but at the same time, it could have been a 2-1 Galaxy or 2-2. But yeah, it was a great half to see both teams back and forth creating chances. But in the end, after withstanding those 10 minutes, it's like when Cedric Toyshirt missed that clear chance he had, it's like a Galaxy like awoke and starting like attacking more, creating chances. And you start to think, missing that goal, we're gonna miss that goal at the end. If Galaxy continues attacking like this and maybe scores a goal or two. But fortunately, City was able to withstand those attacks and then find that chance before the half, and then pouncing again at the beginning of the second half.
Beginning of the second half was kind of crazy. It started off with a 47-minute shot by Edwin Cerrillo, but it really landed home at 49 with Marcel Hartl. It didn't take long for St. Louis to do anything. Coming out of half, the first takeaway I had is that Toyshirt and Durkin remained on the field, which was fantastic to see them continue to progress beyond 45 and as they get themselves into full 90, potentially, of game shape. But the first 5 to 10 minutes were pretty crazy, and it was culminated in that 49-minute goal by Marcel Hartl. That itself was 0.16 XG and 0.6 expected goals on target, which is another really strong shot, good indicator that especially where he placed it on goal, it was likely to go in. This was a play that was developed by the Galaxy possessing and City just doing a good job of initiating a mid-block press, I guess you can say, or at least initiating a mid-block turnover where Marcel Hartl stepped into one and created a turnover just deeper than midfield for City. Passed it to Klaus up in the right channel, and then a long pass to Toyshirt down the left side. So Klaus to Toyshirt cleared the space, and it was, again, Klaus, Hartl, and Toyshirt in transition. Toyshirt was down the left side. Hartl had the finish, all in transition. A tight shot by Hartl that was reminiscent of that Toyshirt shot from the first half, but Hartl didn't hold it as long, and he had a little bit more space to work with. This individual play to put St. Louis up 2-0 at 49 minutes was, to me, without a doubt, the greatest example of those three attackers or three of any St. Louis attackers playing off of each other so far this season. It ended the way we wanted to end, but also it was a really good example of where we were creating that turnover in that middle third, just before midfield part of the field. And then how quickly we were able to move the ball up. We weren't looking to possess the ball at that point. We saw we had the numbers advantage and it was a transition goal. That's the kind of thing that St. Louis, I think, is going to do a lot more often this season because they have the quality up front that we're looking for. And I saw a comment on our live stream in YouTube that I wanted to really ask you a question about this, Santi, because we've talked multiple times before we get into the subs, talked multiple times about Hartle, Toyshirt, and Klaus. Boettcher had his own moment later in the game. Our offense did well this week, but do you feel the amount of offensive roles we've had is light? It's really just three, Hartle, Toyshirt, and Klaus or Boettcher. That's from Daniel Binkholder. I don't know if this is a problem necessarily because every team needs their star goal scorers. And so it might just be St. Louis hasn't had that star group of players that we can really count on to really do the job. We will have our wingbacks. We talked about Thomas Tolan almost had that goal right before halftime. Conrad Vollem has goals scoring already for City in the preseason. We know what he's capable of. Leuven's done more, but he's not being asked to be a goal scorer now in this system. Is there a concern here or should we just be, is this just the new reality that can actually work very well because now we have our star potential goal scorers?
Yeah, no, I'm not concerned. There is also a depth on the bench that we haven't seen much of Celio, Thomas Ostrak, guys that can come in on the second half, mid-second half, and with fresh legs and a tired opponent make a difference. I was actually expecting to maybe see Celio yesterday towards the 65th, 70th minute and see what he will do to put away the game. Unfortunately, Olaf had other ideas, but I'm not concerned. And you always want two or three guys that are your difference makers, and then you complement them with guys that will come off the bench. And yeah, maybe people, like if you think about it, like after the transfer window in the summer, like a big majority of the goals were scored or assisted by Toyshirt, Marcel Hartl, and Simon Boettcher. And yesterday, the three of them scored and Toyshirt assisted in one of the goals. So you could think, oh, there is some dependency there. But yeah, every team has their two or three guys. And then you have guys who shine in our games and guys who come from the bench. And I'm sure we'll see that from Celio, from Ostrak, Rasmus Alm when he's healthy. So I'm not concerned.
In 13 MLS games, Cedric Toyshirt has 6 goals and 5 assists. If you're looking for a core group of goal scorers, that's a pretty good way to lead it off. You expand that out to a 34 game season and you could basically almost triple those numbers going from that's a 15 to 20 goal scoring season. And that's where you want. If you get 15 to 20 goals and then 10 to 15 from two other players, I think you can be happy with those being the majority of your goal scorers. And then to complement them here and there with other players, not even looking at Boettcher or the wingbacks or Celio. That is a recipe for success to me. You need to have these stars and you need to have them do the majority of work. It will come where others do the work. It will come where other goals will fall, like the Totland goal, Totland almost goal. So, you know, you'll have those moments. They will come. This was the first game where everything just kind of clicked. And I have no concerns based on especially what I saw in the near chances of some of these other role players getting goals and having goal contributions as well. Santi, let's talk about probably the most controversial part of the match. And it was the sequence in the second half that I would argue led into the 62-minute subs for St. Louis. And then the fallout, no pun intended, from that substitution. I made note because I want to put into context. That's one of the things I like doing here is putting into context things you see on the field and trying to contextualize the eye test. So 62 minutes, Olaf Melberg makes his first substitution of the game and he subs in Simon Boettcher and Josh Yarrow for Klaus and Toyshirt, moving the formation from that 3-4-1-2 into more of a 5-4-1. This is the second time that Olaf Melberg has really done this. The first time was in preseason against Austin FC. And I forget the exact score at the time of that game, but I know we were up by 2 goals. So I saw this and I thought maybe this is the Olaf Melberg way. Maybe you're up by 2 goals in the second half and that's your go-to. you don't bunker necessarily, because I don't think St. Louis was bunkering, especially what we saw later on from Simon Betcher and when the second set of subs came. But I do think there was definitely an intention behind this to get more focused defensively. And I say that because the near 10 minutes leading up to that, from 53 minutes to 65 minutes, and this was a 62-minute sub. So from 53 to 65, the Galaxy had 8 total shots, with St. Louis having just 1. 6 of those shots came before the subs were made. So there was something wrong, akin to what was happening in the first half, where you're not going to make these kind of subs in the first half.
Right.
You can make these kind of subs in the second half. You're up 2 goals, and you see something that's not working. Now, what we found out at the end of the game, post-game, what Olof Mellberg saw was more in the midfield. I asked him post-game what he saw and why he made that formational change and the specific tactical approach. And he said it had nothing to do so much with this being his philosophy. It was more in the moment. Olof said, "I felt they found a lot of space outside of our 3 midfielders, so we wanted to have a little bit more protection there. I mean, at the time, the first 20 minutes, you know, of the second half, we didn't have so much use of our 2 strikers. So it wasn't really the defensive change as was more that," which is an interesting wrinkle that I don't think people are really remembering, is outside of the Hartl goal that was scored, the inability to connect to Toyshirt and Klaus. And I would love to see the amount of touches that they had in this time span at the beginning of the second half, because Olof is saying that he saw we didn't have much use of our 2 strikers. So it wasn't so much a defensive change as it was also incorporating that. Olof went on to say, again, they found that space a little bit too easily outside of our midfielders, so we needed another one to help them out there. But from then on, we looked really solid defensively, also really dangerous on the break, especially. The fixation in this sub is, I would say, I want to say 4 or 5 minutes after it was immediately made, and you did see a few more opportunities. You saw, I think Marco Reus had some good chances. Mm-hmm. There were some marking issues that the eye test, weren't passing the eye test in responsibilities, maybe with Konrad Wallum, maybe with that extra midfielder, because you do drop a player back into the midfield and now the spacing becomes so markedly different. The lines between your back line and your midfield become a little more blurred in what your responsibilities are. So I do think that there were potential issues there that, obviously, because we ended in a clean sheet, they didn't hurt us too much. And this is a scenario in the game where you can point to, just like a few others elsewhere in the first half as well, that more goals could have been scored in general. This team, to me, did a good job of mitigating the quality that the spacing issue caused. But I think when you look at what Olof was trying to do and the sequence of time that led into this substitution, it is probably harder to argue than a lot of fans want to admit that this was a bad call. And I understand that you're taking out a striker when you think of the success that you had in the first half, you think of what happened at the very beginning of the second half. But if you especially take Olof Mellberg at face value, where he wasn't seeing the connection and the use of his 2 strikers, and he wanted to take away that space, isn't this kind of the tactical change that you want to see proactively from your head coach, as opposed to what we complained about for a year and a half under Bradley Carnell?
Absolutely. Making those adjustments when you see you can make it and it's time for it. Like, yeah, the team was winning 2-0, but you get an LA Galaxy team that is desperate because it will be their 3rd loss of the MLS season, 4 loss in a row. So they were going for it, trying to find spaces, trying to create chances, and they were finding them. As you mentioned, that period of 12 minutes, 8 shots. So there was definitely a problem, and Mellberg just wanted to address it. And it's not necessarily like parking the bus. It's more like closing the spaces. And as you mentioned, he saw that the second striker wasn't being used. So it is a good adjustment. And if we go back to last year, there were a few matches where City was up by 2 goals and ended up giving away the lead. So yeah, it's good to see a coach willing to make those adjustments, and not only to make the adjustments, but make them early if he sees the opportunity and trust that it's going to change the game. So yeah, that's refreshing to see. I really like it.
And it happened also right after the Galaxy made a suite of subs themselves. Mm-hmm. So they had fresh legs on the field too. I think theirs were more like for like, but they definitely had more fresh legs at the time. And then you get into this back and forth of subs, point counterpoint type of things. 75 minutes, the Galaxy and St. Louis sub. The 75 minute mark where you've had this formation change for about 13 minutes, 12 or 13 minutes, and now you're bringing in different personnel. You change the midfield up to guys that are more comfortable in the midfield, where Konrad Vollem had moved up to the midfield role. You take out Vollem and Durkin, who Durkin himself goes from 45 to 75 now. And so he probably reached the limit of what he was being allowed to play. Bringing in Akil Watts and Alfredo Morales made sense, and it shored up that midfield even more, where you're not taking personnel and moving them to a midfield role or moving them different positions compared to what they were, but you're just inserting a player into this role. And so you're able to give him direction on the sidelines before he goes in and let him know what the assignments are. It's almost like a reset into this new formation. And I think that's where a lot of fans, myself included, noticed a little bit of a difference in how this team was both defending and how they immediately started to get a little better momentum, better progression with the ball. 82 minutes saw the final sub. Timo Baumgartl made his debut for St. Louis, coming in for Jonas Horn. And this is Kyle Hebert's third positional shift of the game, moving out to that left wing back spot. It ended up really helping to score that last goal. 84 minutes, St. Louis scores their third and final goal. Simon Becher assisted by Kyle Hebert. Becher's goal, statistically speaking, was pretty similar to what Marcel Hartl's was at 1.16 XG, 0.77 expected goals on target. So again, 3 out of 4 times that goal is going based on where Becher put it. It was a good job by Josh Yarrow, first of all, to keep the ball in play on that right side, retaining possession in traffic, and then getting the ball up to Simon Becher at midfield, who was right at that midfield circle and dribbling it up a little bit, playing some space to open up Kyle Hebert on the left. Hebert then, I mean, even the Kyle Hebert haters have to give him credit for this pass. It was a slick pass leading Simon Becher, the outside of the defender, and then Becher recovers it for the clinical finish. Given the fact that, and this reminded me a little bit, and it wasn't as exciting or as egregious of a lapse by the Galaxy, but it reminded me a little bit of the second goal that San Diego scored against the Galaxy in that first game, where the Galaxy were just trying to throw numbers so high to get some kind of a goal and equalizer then, but San Diego took advantage of it in a quick transition, and St. Louis kind of did the same, where they played the ball up to Becher. Becher took the space because so many Galaxy players were already pushed higher up the field, and it allowed them to dictate that attack, dictate the transitional attack for Becher and Hebert. And I thought that this was not just an exclamation mark because of the almost iconic photo of Simon Becher that.
Oh, I love that.
But it was just it was really cementing the different ways that St. Louis could score in this game. The second transition where you're having an entirely different complement of players. Like, if you want to talk about that point we just made about the three attackers that everybody gives credit for of Klaus, Hartl, and Toyshirt, you're looking at a sequence here that was started from Yarrow to Hebert, Yarrow to Becher to Hebert, and then back to Becher. Like, that's the kind of quality that we can still have that cleans up these games, that scores the goals to put it away. And it was great to see.
Yeah, two of your subs, and then Kyle Hebert, who had shifted positions. So yeah, that's great to see. I was also happy to see that my prediction about Becher scoring from the bench on our DMs became true. So that was good. That was good to see. The only thing missing yesterday was Klaus scoring, but he was very close and he had a good game. So hopefully he will get his confidence up and we'll see goals from him hopefully Saturday.
That's right. The second half, obviously the Galaxy had more possession. They had more shots, way more passes. It was almost like an exaggerated version of the first half that we saw in the second half when you look at the stats. When the game was finished, though, St. Louis didn't just win 3-0, but they only had 30% possession. They had 5 shots on target out of 14 total. The Galaxy had 8 shots on target out of 23 total. So this is a team that had a volume attack. Berkey had all 8 of those saves. The Galaxy were successful in 90% of their passes. So that kind of shows you just how much they were willing to pass the ball back horizontally, not into dangerous areas, and control the ball with that possession. Corner kicks, St. Louis in the first half, I mentioned that 5 corner kicks in quick succession. Once the formation change occurred, the Galaxy kind of marched back and earned some more corners to end up beating St. Louis in the corner category 9-8. But when you look at tackles, interceptions, clearances, and blocks, the defensive numbers that go into this, it makes sense given a 30% possession and a 3-0 win that you would almost double the amount of those tackles, interception, clearances, and blocks that the Galaxy had. St. Louis had 69, LA had 38. Do you want to spotlight some individual players here? Because we could probably go on a little while, Santi.
Yeah, there were a lot of great individual performances. Obviously, Roman Berkey as the man of the match with 8 saves and third consecutive clean sheet. That's a great start of the season for him. But yeah, like he made the saves. But at the same time, when you think about it, the team scored 3 goals. And I was having a hard time when we were talking on the broadcast about the man of the match, because you can look at it both ways, like Berkey making all those saves. But at the same time, when you score 3 goals, you have to give some credit to the offense too. And that's what I did. I chose Cedri Toychar just because he scored the first goal of the season, assisting on the second goal. But yeah, you can talk about some of the few others, but great individual performances yesterday.
Yeah, Cedri Toychar had a goal and an assist. He scored the first goal of the season, like we said, and it was Toychar's 6th overall MLS goal. The assist was his 5th, like I mentioned. And I think this was the kind of performance we wanted to see from Cedri Toychar, being involved and everything kind of flowing through him. Marcel Hartl as well had a goal, his 4th career MLS goal. Hartl had the 2nd most touches on the team behind Edu Leuven, and he was tied for 1st with Leuven in passes into the penalty area. So you could kind of see when you talk about the Hartl and Leuven impact on the chance creation and the goal scoring, this is a pretty good example. You have Leuven and Hartl both delivering service into the penalty area, into the final third, dangerous spots from different areas on the field. When Leuven does it, there's probably more numbers up there than when Hartl does it, who is more likely to be in transition. So different ways in which we can attack and leverage our best players. Simon Betcher had a goal. It was his 10th career MLS goal. He led the team in aerial duels won, winning 5 of 6. And the next highest in those aerial duel categories were 5 players tied with 1 aerial duel won. Simon Betcher winning those duels. And that kind of makes sense in the second half flow, where you see less buildup and more clearing the ball, more sending it up and letting Betcher try to win the ball. Not a lot was created from those, but it was good that Betcher could win those aerial duels and kind of hold the ball up a little bit. Edu Leuven, flowers to Edu Leuven for all of the in-between-the-lines work that he did. He led the team in touches, in tackles, in most short passes. He was 3rd on the team in medium passes, which is 15 to 30 yards, and 2nd on the team in long passes. He led the team with 5 key passes, which is a pass that leads into a shot, and he had 5 passes into the final third. Henry Kessler had an assist. It was his 1st career MLS assist, led the team in blocks as well. And Kyle Hebert, 1st career MLS assist. In addition to playing 3 positions, he had the most medium passes completed of any City player with 17, and he led the team in clearances. I wanted to highlight that pass category for Kyle Hebert because I've seen far too many comments that Kyle Hebert doesn't pass the ball up the field, and he's a liability when it comes to center backs that are trying to play the ball out of the back. And you can write off his defensive work, but if you're not getting any offensive output from Kyle Hebert, he shouldn't be in there compared to a Timo Baumgartel or something. And I get the excitement for Timo Baumgartel. I get the excitement for Joachim Nielsen, but you can't watch these first 3 games and take them holistically for what they are and say that Kyle Hebert isn't pulling his own when it comes to this center back group, right?
Yeah, he is. He is for sure. And yeah, I know people say different things about him, but wherever you put him, he responds. And I remember in preseason, he was playing some left wing back, and we were like wondering like what's going on here. And look, yesterday he played in that role at the end of the game and ended up delivering an assist for Simon Betcher. So the coach knows what he's doing, and he's getting the best out of Kyle Hebert.
And then last but not least, Timo Baumgartel had his debut. It was his first MLS match and his first overall game played since August 5th, 2024 with Schalke. So wow. Baumgartel returning from an illness, finally getting game minutes, sliding in at that left center back spot, which was interesting. A lot of people thought of Timo Baumgartel as a central center back, given his ball control skills. But in this system, when we're asking our left and right center backs to be the one who progress the ball more often than not, I think it kind of makes sense And I would not want to take Henry Kessler out of that central center back spot right now. He mm-hmm. is too valuable through three games to be moving him around anywhere. And you can see the flexibility with Hebert. Yarrow has played right center back consistently when he's come in the game. So that works for me until you can get Joachim Nielsen back, which we hope to see him back in training this coming week. We hope to see him back in game shape. If not Seattle, then maybe Philadelphia or just after that. But for now, I think you've got a pretty decent amount of depth and quality performances between Horn, Kessler, Hebert, Baumgartel, and Yarrow for this center back group.
Yeah, there is definitely depth at the position. And when everybody's healthy, it's going to be interesting to see the battle for the starting spots. But for now, let's enjoy what Kyle Hebert is doing, what Henry Kessler is doing. He became basically the boss of that defense and has had great performances these three games. We'll worry about who's going to start later, but for now, enjoy what these guys are doing.
Enjoy what they're doing, because as of this game, after match day three, St. Louis has moved up to sixth place in the MLS Western Conference. With this shutout, St. Louis becomes the fifth team in the past decade, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and the 11th in MLS history to not concede a goal in the first three games of the season. This is the first instance in City SC history that the team has recorded three consecutive clean sheets. It also took, for context, it took St. Louis 15 away matches last year to get their first road win. I know the club was clamoring, I'm sure, to put that stat out to show the juxtaposition between last year and this year. So that's when we talked earlier about wanting to get this away win and it not being a must win, but it being pretty close. This is one of the reasons why we said it. We suffered through last year's almost endless slog of losing away games to the point where it was just comedic after a certain amount of time. It cost us a head coach and we had long missed the playoffs. The elephant is off our back. Like this is over. Like we can move forward having won an away game already. Through these first 3 weeks, St. Louis is one of four teams in the Western Conference to not have a loss. One of seven teams in the West with an away win. That shows you how valuable that is right off the bat. And we are the only team in all of Major League Soccer through three games to not have conceded a goal. That's why that shutout and clean sheet streak is important. Next week, St. Louis returns home to face the Seattle Sounders, fresh off a convincing 5-2 win over LAFC themselves, and who sit tied with STL on points with five. They had a pretty impressive performance, and it was basically a 5-1 win, but a goal was scored in garbage time by LAFC. It's going to be a dangerous game against Seattle. We return home, so we have that advantage going. Santi, anything else you want before we take a look quickly around the league and give flowers to St. Louis City too?
No. I think that covers everything. Again, as somebody said on the three word reviews, let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Santi, I feel like we're doing this every week when we take a look around the league, but Philadelphia Union. We don't have time to get into how Bradley Carnell has been able to do this and start the season, but props to Bradley Carnell for starting the season 3-0 with, I think they're up to 10 goals scored in three games after a 2-0 win against the New England Revolution. That was a game that obviously piqued my interest because of what Carnell is doing out there. You had this aforementioned Seattle 5-2 win over LAFC. Another interesting match for me was Minnesota defeating San Jose, handing them their first loss, I believe, of the season. This is parity in play right here, where you have a road victory from Minnesota United. Miami beat Charlotte in the game before St. Louis played. San Diego beat Salt Lake 3-1. So this team continues their better than expected ascent. Chicago beat Dallas 3-1. And SKC lost again to DC United. I want to finish my look with DC United because of the goal that Jose Kojima scored.
Yeah.
If you missed it, it's on my social media, so check it out. But Jose Kojima, former City player who was taken in the expansion draft by San Diego, scored his first goal for DC United. And it was a quality goal off a corner kick. He did some real good work and it helped to beat SKC, which we're none too broken up about.
Yeah. I'm happy for a player like Kojima. Obviously this is a business and the team saw an opportunity by not protecting him on the expansion draft. But I'm glad he's doing well. The two I wanted to mention, and you mentioned one, San Diego winning away again. So now they are up to 7 points. Colorado winning away against Austin, but they're also undefeated. It was their first win of the season, but also shows what City is doing against teams that are having a good season. So it's great. It's a good measuring test. Yeah, a couple of scoreless draws, and the team did it in different ways, but it shows that the team is on the right track. Again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but doing it again against Seattle will be great for the team, and it will be one of those wins that the team has never beaten Seattle, and it will be one of those that will show, hey, we're here, and we're a team that is gonna be a contender this season.
Absolutely. It's the measuring stick. You know, you take advantage of the teams you need to take advantage of against the LA Galaxy, for instance, but you get the advantage of a home match coming up. This is the kind of team you need to beat. This team in Philadelphia, strong showings will go a long way. I don't think anybody's going to be too broken up if we end up drawing both of these. Frustrated maybe, but take them for what they're worth for a team as quality. And Seattle has a few matches, as we'll talk about a preview for them later this week, but Seattle has a few matches with Champions Cup going on as well that they're being stretched thin on. A couple quick points before we're out of here, Santi. If you're watching on our live stream or if you're listening to the pod on Monday or Tuesday, you have an opportunity, and hopefully into Wednesday, depending on how quickly tickets go, to see the U.S. Open Cup in St. Louis in early May, as tickets go on sale for the round of 32 U.S. Open Cup match on Tuesday, March 11th. And the interesting thing about this is it's going to be general admission for everybody. Did you see
for
this?
For everybody?
Season,
no,
I'm... Season ticket members and MyCity Plus members have access to the exclusive round of 32 and round of 16 match presale beginning Tuesday, March 11th at 10 a.m., both round of 32 and round of 16 are general admission and will be sold as individual events with no reserved seating. First time ever that this has happened for a St. Louis City game. For the first two rounds, the general public can purchase tickets for $40 plus fees. Season ticket members can purchase for $30 plus fees in their SeatGeek account. The general ticket sale beyond the season ticket members and MyCity Plus will be Tuesday, March 11th at 2 p.m., so set your alerts, set your reminders right now. The round of 32 matchup will either be May 6th or May 7th. It's a confirmed home match. The round of 16 will either be May 20th or 21st. And City said that if we do not advance past the round of 32, then you'll be refunded the price of those. So this presale will be for the round of 32 and round of 16. Santi, the last thing I want us to talk about before we get out of here is City 2. We would be remiss if we didn't give all the credit in the world, because City 2 made this even more exciting game, even more exciting Sunday night soccer, making it a back-to-back defeat of defending champions. St. Louis knocked off the LA Galaxy, and City 2 knocks out North Texas in convincing fashion, just like St. Louis City, 3-0. Goals were scored on the City side. There was an own goal early in the game. Goals were scored on the City side by Brendan McSorley and Miguel Perez. Miguel Perez scoring his first MLS Next Pro goal. Great to see Miggy back in action. Great to see him succeeding at the Next Pro level, back with the City organization in 2025. Brendan McSorley picking up where he left off last year. Caden Glover was also in the starting lineup. In fact, all four homegrowns.
All the homegrowns, yeah.
All the homegrowns started this match. So that was an indication with just a 5-person bench for this game. Maybe an indication early of where City 2 plans to go and minutes that they plan to give for some of these players. Christian Olivares had a clean sheet, credit to him as well. This is a great start for City 2 as well.
Yeah, it's great to start with a win and away against the champion from previous season. And what I like was seeing the four grooms getting a playing time, getting minutes, being starting the game, and Miggy with a goal, also great to see. And hopefully these four guys, if they don't get opportunities with the first team, they are consistent starters with the second team.
Agreed. Absolutely. That's it for us on Flyover Fallout for this week. Just a quick programming note. The next couple of weeks may look a tad bit different for Flyover Footy. This week, I am going to be, if everything works well, interviewing Jeremiah Oshan from Sounder at Heart. And we'll have that interview as the majority of our upcoming Seattle preview. We'll still have a video up for you Thursday night, but it may not be our usual live stream. you know, even we have to deal with fixture congestion and making sure that our vocal cords and our mental health as well for the whole season. So we'll have content for you, but it may look a little different and exciting because so, we'll get a little bit of the opposition as a point of view as opposed to just us discussing them. And then the following week, we may have something similar lined up for the Philadelphia Union. But with all, if everything aligns well, Santi and I will be back each and every week for our fallouts. Santi, thanks for joining me on this edition of Fallout, looking at a 3-0 City win. Anything else you want to say before we go?
Yeah, just fresh off the press, Berkey and Seri Toichar made it to Team of the Week.
You know, I had a goal, Santi, of this show. If that dropped, we would be able to mention it. And I'm glad that I drug us out just long enough to let us get that in. Yep, looks like Team of the Match Day has come out on the... Do we have anybody on the bench? Nobody on the bench. Oh, and our defenders get snubbed again.
Yeah, I hate that, but that's okay.
Roman Berkey with his 8 saves, 3rd clean sheet, gets starting Team of the Match Day goalie. Cedric Choyshirt makes Team of the Match Day for his 1-goal, 1-assist performance. Fantastic to see those two recognized. We still are flying the flag for a Henry Kessler Team of the Match Day appearance, and we will have vindication at some point this season, but... Excited to see Berkey and Toyshirt. Job well done for them, capping off the City 3-0 win this week.
Yeah, that's great. Obviously, Kessler had an assist, but usually the defenders that are chosen are defenders who either score or did something more notable. But yeah, Kessler, in our hearts, he's on the Team of the Week.
That's right. All right, that's it for us on Flyover Footy. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Fallout, looking at the 3-0 City win over the LA Galaxy. For Santiago Beltran, my name is Matt Baker. We will talk to you later.
Vamos City!